Here's Mary Ellen Angelscribe, author of Expect Miracles, with a Miracle Minute.
Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira. And today I thought we would talk about parapsychology and the evolution of it in a way, because as I've begun teaching mediumship, teaching people to develop their clairvoyance, clairsentient, all the parts of being a clairvoyant or psychic, I really have found that we have entered a different time, and there's so many wonderful tools to help people develop now. So I wanted to share with you some research and some information that I've gleaned as I've started these classes and started to teach, because sometimes it is our history that gets us to the next spot of evolution in development in particular. So I started doing some research about when did science really get into the mix of spiritual studies, because really for a long time spiritual encounters were considered folklore, myths, ghosts, things that were are religious connections more so than to go to a scientist. Mostly, if you had those kinds of things, you would go to your minister, you would go to your religion of some kinds, or you would go to the most educated person in your town or hamlet. So there was a transition somewhere in all of that, that there actually got to be people who were quote-unquote philosophers and scientists began to do some studies. And so it was interesting as I began really looking into this. One of the first, very first societies for psychic research was the SPR, and it's the first major organization for scientific research into the paranormal. And it was founded in London in 1882. I find that interesting that it's actually about 34 years after their first experience of spiritualism, when the Fox Sisters really became the movement of spiritualism, and it became sort of more public to have this encounter or to seek out even the experience of mediumship. The SPR arose in part in response to popular interest in spiritualism and part in the desire of science and religion to come together and to validate the phenomena that was happening at the time. Early topics that were really discussed or researched was ESP, extrasensory perception, poltergeist, apparitions, mediumship. They really were trying to understand also because they weren't sure that people weren't being mixed up in mesmerism, which was the pre-runner to hypnotism, that people were going into this sort of mesmerized state and having hallucinations and visions. And so the need, people who had education really wanted to have a better understanding, is this really, you know, fraud or hoax, or are these people being led into this mesmeristic trances and having these apparitions and these things happen? So the SPR had its origins in the interest of proving this phenomena, and Frederick W. H. Myers, Henry Sedgwick, Edmund Grunanti, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, followed and started this in connection with actually Trinity College in Cambridge. Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Welcome to the show. Hello, who am I talking to?
My name's Richard.
Hi, Richard.
Well, I need a little reading on a few matters.
Okay, well, actually, I don't take calls usually till the half past. I'll try and see what I get for you. But today usually, I try to start my show with 30 minutes of talking about a subject first.
Oh,
so,
okay.
No, that's okay, Richard. Hang on. So for my listening audience, I'll see what I get for Richard, and then we'll go back to what we were talking about on the parapsychology.
Richard, first, I believe
Richard,
by
what?
Accident.
Richard,
couple
hello?
Things. Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, it's in and out. So are you on a cell phone or something?
Yeah, I'm in upstate New York right
okay.
now. That's,
all right. So the first thing I get for you, can you hear me okay, Richard?
Yes, I can.
Okay. The first thing I get for you is that there's some kind of change around your work, that you've been under about a year and a half of major stress around working conditions. Do you understand this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a shift in what you're going to do, almost like maybe even who you're working for is shifting. So there's a big shift in what's going to happen around your work, which will make you a lot happier because you actually almost have been holding your breath over stress in the workplace. They also say that this is a time for you to kind of do some inner work about how you see yourself in your job, in what you do for a living. I don't think you're leaving that job, but there certainly is a change around it, meaning that either the company is changing or there's an opportunity for a change, but you're about 3 months out from it.
Okay.
So that's going to help you. The other thing is I feel like you're on again, off again in the relationship department a little bit.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was going to ask
you
there.
Yeah. You got to do a little homework, and that is that you haven't really kind of detached from your last two relationships emotionally. So you're dragging that into the new relationships. But I do feel like a new relationship comes along in about 4 months. So because you're kind of half in and half out of one right now.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah.
I also for an emergency, a friend of the family, an emergency right now. And I don't know if it's going to go. It's chronic lung disease.
I'm
Are
sorry.
You there?
Yeah, you cut out, honey. You said something about a family emergency with chronic lung disease.
The lady I'm with now, her son, for the last 3 months, has been out of in and out of emergency, a major lung surgery, seven times, and they just can't get it right. He was out yesterday. He's back again today, and they're sticking tubes in his chest.
What's his first name? Just first name. No last name. Just first name.
Eric.
Say it again, honey. You keep cutting out.
Eric.
Yeah, I feel like that they're getting a new doctor in his case, and that's going to turn this all around. That the people, the doctors he's had previously, there's been some misinterpretations of what's going on, or I don't want to say misdiagnosed. I really want to say not everybody's been catching everything that's been going on with this lung difficulty, okay? So that this new person that's brought on board really sort of does it by the numbers, and so a lot of this emotional roller coaster and over panic is going to stop. So I really feel like he does get a lot of help, okay?
Well, he's got it. He's going to die. He's
hard place to be. Thank you for calling in, Richard.
Bless you. Thank you.
Blessings, darling. Thank you, Richard. I hope you can hear me. And I do feel like Eric's going to get some help with that, but he's got to calm down too, and that's hard to do when you feel as bad as he does. So back on track, for my listeners, I want to remind you I usually do talk for 30 minutes trying to educate, and then I will take calls if you need them. But I also trust if someone interrupts that, you know, I certainly trust spirit and try to help you. And the number to call at half past is 1-877-876-5227. So back about the society, the SPR, Society for Psychic Research, it was formed, and here were these really educated men. These people were really had college, and they were getting fascinated by this the movement, actually, of spiritualism. And so they were intrigued, and after attending some seances conducted by a C. Williams, they started really looking into it, asking questions, trying to come up with a way to study this phenomena. And so Sedgwick was a very skeptical person, and he agreed to really be part of the investigation because he really didn't believe. He really had a very scientific mind, where Myers and a couple of the other people, they were kind of already intrigued. They had had enough phenomena happen that they kind of had a belief that there was something to it. So it was interesting that they started this study. They started the foundation in 1882 and really kept pursuing it until they actually started a formal, they had a building and everything and started doing real formal studies. But they really set the precipice for having a key questionnaire, having a procedure they followed. Because what had happened in the early years, which is very interesting to me, is that in the early years, they were really pretty brutal to the mediums. Because these people were so wanting to make sure there was no fraud, they would actually strip search the mediums. And you got to remember, this is in the 1800s. Women were, you know, were in the parlor. They weren't public figures. They wore very, you know, conservative clothing, and you weren't left in a room with a male that wasn't related to you. And so to be strip searched was pretty, you know, extreme. They were actually often searched or scrutinized. There would be women present, but there would be doctors present. They would actually tie these mediums up, bind their feet, bind their hands. They would even make them hold sugar in their mouths to make sure that the noise or the sounds or the things that were going on were not coming out of the medium's mouth. So it was pretty extreme conditions that they treated the mediums in the beginning. And this organization kind of took some of that overly barbaric experiences out of the seance room. But they did hold the medium's hands. They did have set questions and ways that they interrogated or investigated. And if they found fraud, they exposed it. They were very verbal about that. They published papers on it. And so it really, in some ways, was good for spiritualism because it kept it pure and it kept the mediums pure. But in other ways, too, it was very stressful on mediums because when mediumship happens, it's not predictable. You know, one night you could have a lot of spirit activity. The next night there might be nothing. It depends on the sitters. It depends on many, many things and conditions, atmospheric conditions. So they started doing extensive research. They actually set up six committees, and they were established to pursue techniques of experiencing thought transfer. They did experiments to see if people were using telepathy, which was being done unconsciously. Was this message really coming from someone who's passed over, or is this coming from the people sitting in the room? So they were trying to prove what is telepathy versus what is mediumship. And so extensive work they did, and a lot of mediums that were in integrity really volunteered to be their subjects. And much of their work got published. It's very, very interesting. And this organization, which was founded in England, then sparked its counterpart in America, which is the American Society for Psychic Research, the ASPR. And it was started in January 1885 in Boston and was run by William Fletcher Barrett. And he was the main person in America who did the research. And they brought some of the people from England to do research. And as it evolved, they really kind of set a lot of the things that are actually still even used today. Because one of the things that's even used in laboratory today to test mediums is Zener cards. And Zener cards were invented by Dr. Zener, and that was actually Carl Zener. And they were actually invented, I actually think, in the 1800s, but not to the extent of the full deck that was later used. It was actually, a less extensive. I think it was only maybe three. I was trying to find the information on it because the dates are in conflict. The original data I had was that Dr. Zener worked with, Professor Zener worked actually with J.B. and L.E. Rhine to do a study in Duke University in 1930. So actually the Zener deck came much later, but it is the foundation of a deck that's used today even in parapsychology labs and in research. And this Zenar deck is a deck of, well, it's five symbols. So it's the ones where you see the wavy lines, the star, the circle, the cross, and the square. And so when I did some more research about this, I found it so fascinating that it's still being used to test mediums today, and yet it was used at Duke University all those years ago. So I decided to start using it in my class, and what I decided to do was add two more symbols. I added a triangle and a heart, and I'm using the chakra colors because I think it's important to help mediums develop. So if you're running a class out there or you want to learn to develop your own self, trying this experiment, I think, will be amazing to you, is to have somebody you know make the cards out, make them up yourself, or I don't know if you can order them. I've been looking for Zenar cards. I haven't yet to find a place that I can order them. But I actually just took the shapes, made them up into out of colored like cardboard, and made seven of each, one of each color, like the seven crosses, seven circles, seven squares, seven hearts. And then what I do is I put them in envelopes. I pick different ones every week, put them in a 1-7 envelope, and have my class use psychometry to tell. They hold it, a sealed envelope, and they tell, they get what, they number their paper 1-7, and then they go, okay, number one is red heart, number two is green square. Whatever they get, they write on their paper. And so far, most of the time, they get one thing right, or they might get four colors right, but not the they get the right colors, but they can't get the object. So it's interesting to me that some people pick up color faster than they do symbols or shapes. So it's a great tool to use as an exercise in a development class. The other thing that I think is interesting to use is also to use telepathy by sending a picture. What it does is helps develop you receiving things, not just from this world, from this scene, from mind to mind, but also it raises your consciousness to interpret and receive and grasp symbols even from spirit world. So what you're doing is starting to build a foundation for your mediumship or your clairvoyance or your psychic ability. What I'm hoping for my particular group is that by using these techniques, that someday, that if they were tested, they would be ahead of the game because they would already have a sense of these symbols. They would have a sense whether they see them in their mind's eye. Do I see the color or do I feel the color? Like one person says, well, I feel how I get the color is wherever the chakra, like, for example, the throat chakra is blue. If the symbol in the envelope's blue, they feel that chakra get warm. So there's lots of ways of developing and sensing, feeling, knowing that this could be a great tool in the future. So it's interesting that is really the forerunner in like I said, 1930, the Zenar cards were developed, or actually maybe even a little earlier than that, but that's when they were used at Duke University. They were actually, yep, in North Carolina, they were developed by Carl Zenar. And then quite a while later, parapsychology really has gotten much more credible, well-known, was really, I think, taken seriously and formed in 1957. So from 1930 to 1957, it's quite a span of time. But the advance of science to accept parapsychology as a science is getting more and more interesting and developed, I believe, because I think the scientific mind is really grasping that there's something going on beyond our understanding. For example, when I was talking to a scientist who I have to really say did not really believe in psychic development things too much, and we were talking about, you know, mediumship and clairvoyance and all these things, and he said, well, he didn't really believe in those. And I said, but why do you do double-blind experiments if you don't believe in telepathy or something? and he couldn't answer me. And a double-blind experiment is that they have more than one scientist work on specific experiments, because they have actually found that if you have certain expectations, your mind has certain expectations in your mind about experiences, that may be interacting with those molecules or whatever experiment you're working on. So that's why they have double-blind experience. They have several scientists work on a particular experiment at the same time to see how much degree of effect and difference there are. So the interesting parapsychology future and understanding will really truly be the big, huge breakthrough, I think, eventually for mediumship and psychic ability to become normal. Just like, IQs are getting higher, that people are have more dexterity because of all the Game Boys and the games that people have played. 3 and 5 year olds are on computers now learning their ABCs. So as all of this amazing things are advanced and our mind and consciousness expands, I really think that we are beginning to experience an expansion of our consciousness and our use of our brain that we haven't seen in the past, except in people that we consider quote-unquote geniuses, Einstein, Mozart, people who have this expanded use of their mind, and they don't have the limitations or the fears that most people do. We see this now, even in these quote-unquote indigo kids that we're seeing that Oprah's had on TV, where the lady could, I think she was 4 when she could name all the presidents and everything. So as we develop that linear thinking of retaining that kind of memory, or photographic memory, those things like that, I also think that our ability for psychic experiences and our mind is expanding. So this new way of really, or the new fields in science to study the phenomena is exciting. Gary Swartz has written a book called The Afterlife Experience, where he has really studied some very gifted mediums, George Anderson, Anne B. Gaiman, John Edwards, Alison Dubois. There's many, many other names, and I apologize for not naming them all, but that book is an excellent book because it does talk about how he tried to keep the experiment so pure. He actually used some of the techniques that have been used, not so much the Zenar cards, I don't think were involved in that, his testing, but the techniques that were developed by some of the scientists that we mentioned earlier. Some of the scientists in the 1800s would screen the people that would be sitting in the room. In other words, they would interview them to make sure that they weren't feeding the medium information. They would have them set behind the medium so the medium couldn't see who they were, and would have the medium give evidential information. And I know that for many of you who have seen John Edwards on TV, you've seen him do that before, where he has his back to the person and says certain things, of hits that he gets. But Gary Swartz has taken it a little even further than that, and that is he has done an outline. He does these outlines where he has the sitter interviewed, and they give the name of the person they're trying to contact. Is the person male or female? Is the person married? Do they have kids? What did they do for a living? What were their favorite color? I mean, he has incredible, like, this is the guidelines we're going to go through. So at any time during this reading, any material that's given is marked off by one of the researchers. When Gary Swartz did some of this, he also then wanted to know, like, how much of this is telepathy? Because even if you can't see the theater, the reason they have the sitter behind is to make sure that the person's not reacting facially or with body language, that the medium's not reading, body language, or not intuiting by change in voice or anything. So it's really interesting that there's just so much dynamics in trying to keep the data pure and collect enough data consistently over long-term studies to really lay the foundation for an understanding of real, true mediumship. People like Lenore Piper and Eileen Garrett were really studied extensively. In fact, Eileen Garrett was very open and very much in support of that. Edgar Cayce actually was studied quite extensively until under trance. They removed his fingernails when he was under trance, so that kind of ended that experience because they really, scientists were pretty tortury. They would, you know, try to prove that he was not really in trance and not really unconscious, and unfortunately, there was some awful things done to mediums in their sleeping trance state. Today, though, it seems like they have not, they've kind of backed off on doing physical tortures like that, but they do brain scans. They hook their brains up to things, electrodes, and they try to see if the brain, respiration, all of those things. So the foundation of the future for understanding the work of clairvoyants and psychics and mediums, I think we're going to have so much more input, and we're going to find some consistencies that have not probably been tracked before. I think you've heard me mention before that I'm dyslexic. In fact, I'm pretty seriously dyslexic. If you ever get an email from me, you'll really understand the meaning of that. I'm a terrible speller. But I have found, as I've done this study on my own, I found that a lot of clairvoyants, a lot of psychics, mediums, people in the field of this are dyslexic. And I wonder if our gift, if that's connected to our gift, or do our brain synapses jump a little differently? Because they say, actually, people who are dyslexic, their synapses jump differently. They fire off differently. I would love to see a study done about that to see, you know, is that really have something to do with how we're wired, how our brains are wired, how we experience things or perceive things? Is that why some people see more with the third eye? It's just a whole fascinating avenue that has not quite yet been studied. So parapsychology, I don't know if anyone's out there and sitting at their computer and can get information, because I'm not that good at the computer, on what colleges or what universities offer parapsychology. I would love to do more research and talk to some of these people, these scientists who are running parapsychology group studies. I think that some of the parapsychology, I don't even know what you call them at universities, departments. I also would love to know if they also run ghost busting, if they really are doing some scientific studies on haunted houses. I've often wondered, and I'm sure that my listening audience has wondered too, doesn't it make you sort of crazy when you're watching the, you know, the haunted house show, Amityville Horror, all those, whether fictitious or not, but I, even when they had, like, on the Discovery Channel not too long, they had a haunted house, and it's supposed to be true stories, and I wonder why they don't continue to these houses once the people get scared off. Why doesn't that become the laboratory? Hello, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Atira. How are you?
I'm good.
I was enjoying your first half hour.
Thank you.
And I'm calling to see what message your angels have to say and what source and when will any financing come in.
Okay, first name and where from?
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Aimia.
What I hear for you is that, actually, you know, your finances aren't too bad, but you really need to not be so, you're almost on this over-worry stuff about everything in your life right now, hon. They say that cash flow does get a lot better, but you're about 5 months out, hon. Sorry. You know, I'd like it to flow a little better before then, but that's really when you get the break. That's the window of opportunity for you right now.
And do they have any other message?
Well, one thing I want to say for you is when I'm in your energy field, I feel like you've been on flight or fright. Do you know what that I mean by that?
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I'm a little almost cryy-eye, like I've been overwhelmed by things, and I don't think it's just these finances. I really want to ask you to kind of talk to your angels and trust your angels and your guidance a little more, because you're making it too bad about you, and you're having to haul everything up the hill, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're not doing it alone. They're there with you, but you're going like, yeah, but I'm used to doing it myself. You're kind of telling them off, and you need to really invite them in and let them help you with that burden. Actually choose not to carry some of the burdens, and they will help you because you're really limiting how they can help you. Because I really want it for my audience and for you too, is that it's a free will clause. If you don't ask them, they can't help. So I never ban my angels. I always go, yo, flock, get over here, help me.
Yes, but what am I then doing for them to say that I am not asking them on a daily basis? Do I need to correct?
They say that you're kind of caught in, you put it out there, but then you suck it back. In other words, it's like you want to control it. Rather than saying, Spirit, help me for my highest good, you're kind of more directing. You want kind of like, I want it to look like this, you know? And they're saying, but that's not really for your best, highest good. See what I mean?
Yes, I understand, but is there anything else that they could say to me that may help also regarding my health?
Mostly it's about the stress level that you put yourself under, honey. If you could let go and let God, so to speak, let your angels, other things help you, rather than be so caught up in fixing everything, then your health will improve too, because you're holding it. You're trying to hold it all together. You're trying to be very, controlling is not the word I want to use, but responsible is the word I want to use, because you think you have to make it all happen. And I'm saying if you'd let Spirit help you, it would flow better and you won't be caught in the I have to so much.
Okay. Being more flexible.
Yeah, because
or trusting.
Yeah, trusting. It's not even that you're not trusting. It's just that you've always had to make it happen yourself, and you know, you're just a person that's like had to be in control and had to fix. And we get in a habit of that, and then when Spirit's saying, but let me help you, mm-hmm. then you don't know what to do, sort of. So I'm going to say it like this, and I tell my clients this all the time. I'm saying to you, come over in the limo with me, with the angels, guides, and masters, and we'll go to this event, and we'll have a good time, right? And you're saying, no, I'm waiting for the cab. You got your focus on what you think it should look like, and Spirit's saying, if you'll just let go, I'll give you something, this or better.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah, and you really are at that point of letting go, and it's good. And we all get, when we're afraid about something or we're worrying something, we hang on tighter, you know? It's just our innate nature. I'm not being, pointing it out to you. I mean, we all do this. It's all our nature to go like, oh, I'm afraid, so we hang on more. And sometimes we just have to release. Blessings.
I understand. Is there any message that they would give then that would work for me to let go?
Actually, this is a great lesson in that, because Spirit just gave you all the answers and you're still wanting more. Tell me, you know, you're looking for a magic pill and there isn't one, hon. The best thing to do is get off the phone from me and sit down and hang out with your angels and say, dear angels, I release in this moment to you. And then you will take probably the best deep breath you have in 3 months.
Okay.
Okay? And you will actually, in that moment, they will give you the answer of how to release and how to let go.
Okay.
Magic tool is sometimes being in the moment.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because if we have our expectations, it's like that's when we put the roadblock in our face. And it's really, you're a great teacher tonight. Thank you for calling in. Because we all do this to ourselves. We all get caught up in that ego mind. See, when we have to control, our mind gets so, 47 things. You ever just try and sit down and have a minute with Spirit, you know? And all of a sudden, the dishes in the sink need to be done and the laundry and, I got to call 3 people. And all that stuff gets in your mind. And that's That's because we get to be so controlling about, I can't make this about me. I can't make this moment about me in spirit. And we have to get in that silence to let go.
I understand.
And when you do that, you're going to get lots and lots of answers, hon. You're really ready to just absolutely break through all of this stuff that's, you know, kind of got you sidetracked and on the woulda, shoulda, coulda stuff. And just it's going to just break loose, and you'll be so happy, hon.
Thank you very,
you
very
so
much.
You so deserve it. Yeah, bless your heart.
Thank you. You as well.
Okay, take care. What a great teaching tool. Thank you so much for that, because it's true. We get so busy, and people all the time when I read for them, they want say, but, you know, give me the rule book. Give me the tool. And the truth is that for every person, the tool is different. And so I can give you all the information the angels give you, but they don't say do it by the numbers. They say it's a commitment between me and that angel, me and God, spirit. And so when you get in that personal connection, I can give you some tools, but how you choose to use the tools is a personal experience. But by getting quiet for that moment and saying, you know, dear spirit, in this moment, I'm divinely guided. In this moment, I trust that you will give me this, whatever I'm asking for, or better. Because sometimes, you know, it's careful what you wish for, you might get it. And you wish for something, and you, as human beings, we don't always get all the details. In fact, I have this great story. I had a really good friend who really didn't believe in this stuff, but was in such a job. I mean, she called me every week with this job from heck, and she hated it so much. And so one day she caught me in a mood where I said, that's it, I don't want to hear it anymore. You know, let's get you the different job. And I told her, I said, go get a job application, fill it out just like you're going to apply for the job, and on the back side of that, you attach a white piece of paper and you write cosmic job description. And write what, if you could get the perfect job, what would it be? And she goes, well, I know there's this job I want. It's down the street, 15 minutes from where I live. I said, okay, that's the title of the job. You know, write everything you want. I said, you want medical, dental, you want good insurance, you want 15 minutes from your house, you want what pay, everything. And for 30 days, we really worked on it. Well, I think it was actually 2 weeks into the next month, so it was a little over 30 days. Sure enough, she gets a call back that the person that they had hired did not work out. She got the job. And then after 3 weeks, she calls me back with 1-800-WAH. She says, I love it. It's everything I want except the boss. She forgot to say, I want a great boss. She loved everybody she worked with. She didn't have any office gossip, but she left out that detail. And she says, what am I going to do? I can't stand the boss. I can't stay here. And I said, yes, you can. Let's go back and ask Spirit to give that person their dream job elsewhere. And I said, now pick who you want to be your boss. And actually, about 30 days later, sure enough, that boss got their job they've been waiting for, and she had the boss that she loved, and she's still in the job, and she's happy. So sometimes we have to let go and give it to Spirit, say, this or better, because we are very limiting in our mind. We get tunnel. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi. Is here?
Mm-hmm.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
I can't believe I finally got through.
Hey.
Yep. Should I ask you a question?
Yeah, I'd love for you to state your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Elisa, and I'm calling from Colorado.
Hi, Elisa from Colorado.
Yep. Hello. Particular question. See, when you know it's based on it right now.
Deep breath.
Well, I guess I've kind of been following along, I guess, sort of the same lines as you, but certainly not with the same experience as you, but angel experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Communicating with them.
So you're an angelic reader?
Yes, kind of, sort of, yeah.
Okay, now wait, we're going to do this as a teaching thing because it's a great teaching tool.
Okay.
What did she just say? Kind of, sort of.
Well,
so listen to me, darling. You can't. I don't want you to be kind of, sort of. You need to own that you're an angel reader, because you are. I really get that energy from you. I trust that. So don't be wishy-washy, because if you're wishy-washy, you get wishy-washy. You know, it's a law of attraction, darling.
Okay.
So you are an angelic reader. Nice to meet another angel reader. So what's your question? You want to go more public about being a reader?
Oh, well, no, not really. I have a small circle of friends that I mm-hmm. work with it amongst, and I guess I was just wondering, is this something that I should actually try and pursue, or is it just one of those things that's going to...
I'd actually pursue it with you, hon. I think you actually have the talent.
Really?
Everybody has this ability, but not everybody has the talent to do the work that I do or teach. Not that I'm better than anybody. It's just that some people are not comfortable with going public. Some people are not comfortable with working with people, taking on the responsibility. Because, you know, guys, I hate to tell you this, there's side effects of this work. You know, it's a lot of responsibility, and unfortunately, not everybody talks about that.
Right.
Yeah. So it is a responsibility, and I think you have the talent to pursue it. How involved you want to be is going to be up to you. But
okay.
I think you'd be a great teacher. I'd love to see you form a group in Colorado. Didn't you say that's where you are?
Yes.
In Colorado, I'd love for you to form an angelic group and teach and help other people develop. This is going to be our new norm, and we need our own species, you know,
mm-hmm.
to have a camaraderie with. So I'd encourage you, hon. You got to work on some self-esteem and defrag your energy field a little bit.
Defrag it,
yeah.
Clear out all the negative junk, right?
Well, I think that when I'm in your energy, I have a self-esteem problem. And if you have a self-esteem problem, you can't trust. And to do this work, you have to trust. You have
okay.
to learn to trust what you're getting. And from the very beginning, unfortunately, we have a little wishy-washy going on.
Well,
yeah.
that's yeah. par for my course.
So for you, journaling would be very important, because when you journal, if you wrote what you get when you give readings to your friends and stuff,
mm-hmm.
what by journaling you see your track record. You see actually how many hits you really get.
Okay.
And you'll see how accurate you are and the consistencies and where your fears are, hon.
Okay. Well, can I ask you something a little more detailed about
sure.
that? When people, I guess, communicate with angels, I know they're not always the same, but is it possible that maybe they are more frequent than others?
I don't understand what you mean.
I'm not looking at them like they're, I don't know, guides or something who would see me through, you know, my entire life or something, but... Is there one in particular, maybe, that is around?
Well, it's my belief, and this is only from my work. I can't speak for other people's work because everybody has their own opinion on this. From my work, I believe we come in with two angels.
Okay.
We come in with a male and a female because angels are really androgynous, but most of the time, because of our needs as human beings, we will call someone in when we need nurturing, and it'll be more female energy. They appear that way to us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then when we need protection, we call in the male energy. I think they come in duality because we're in a duality world, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I have found most of the time that birth angels stay with you all your entire physical life on Earth.
Really? I did not know that.
Now, you can have more than that. Certainly, you know, I've been just reading. I just read for a lady the other day that had 42 angels because she's in a big transition in her life and she's starting her life path of work. And so she called them all in, and it's just 4:44 on the clock as we speak, angelic numbers. But it's that you can call in, you know, you can call in archangels to help you. You can call in any number of angels. I don't care if you want an angel that works on cars. You know, I mean,
right.
angels are very diversified. And 10 to 1, if you're going to call in somebody to work on your car, it's going to be a guide because it's going to be somebody that understands a car from this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, angels most of the time have not done Earth, so, I mean, in a physical form. So certainly you can have a diversity, but I'm not surprised you see the same angel over and over.
Okay, well, I don't suppose you could maybe give me names, could you?
I can certainly ask. The first one I want to say, first thing I heard was Navarone. Navarone is that's how I hear it. Don't ask me to spell it. I'm the dyslexic person here.
Okay.
Okay. And then I also have, and I feel like that's female.
Female, okay.
Okay, that feels female to me. And then I got, like, coal, like coal, like fuel, you know, like coal from the ground.
Okay.
Coal.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, angels, yeah, I have to explain this. when I hear these sound, these names for angels, they come in sounds and tones and symbols. I make them make it in English for me because that's what I speak.
Okay.
So you may even hear a little different twist to it. What I found often, if you talk to children or watch children, they'll name their dolls the same name. They'll name their pets the same name. If you pay attention, often they're naming their toys or things that are around them their angelic names. They're the names that they're hearing from their invisible friends.
That's what I thought that was interesting. I've always liked that name, Cole.
There you go.
Very interesting.
And he, and actually, that angel says it's been with you in more than one lifetime, so.
Oh.
So that's exciting, you know.
Cool.
I'm not so sure my Dom ever wants to come back with me. I got him a lot of work.
Too much work, yeah.
Yeah. So I hope that answers some questions. But, yeah, I would encourage you to read. I really want to encourage you, if you're interested in developing more with the angels, Doreen's deck of angel cards are really a great tool. Now, it's just a tool, but it really does help you facilitate and grow. And her book, Divine Guidance and Angel Therapy, are two of the best angelic books. Now, I know that Sylvia Brown actually just wrote an angel book not too long ago, and forgive me, I don't know the name of it. I actually just read it not too long ago. Fabulous book. I thought it was very accurate, except that she says they don't really have names and stuff.
Oh, really?
And I said, that's a personal opinion, because I think that they are like us. Our names are vibrational. And so to communicate, for us to communicate with them, they're very okay with, you know, using names. It's a vibration. I also have seen them use where it's a symbol, too. So I think it can be either or.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
I hope
thank
that
you
helps
very
you
much.
Tonight. You bet.
Have
blessings.
A good day.
You bet. Blessings.
Bye.
Very cool. Yeah, it's a great time to be alive because people are developing it. And I really listen to these little, these kids. These kids are so fascinating now. And I love that I'm meeting more and more teachers that are really, they've got it. They've got that they have a whole new species of kids in school. And they are developing tools and things and taking metaphysics into the classrooms under the disguise. And that's why the Xenar cards would be fun to use in classrooms. And color is so fun to use in classrooms because these new kids, any form of clairvoyance is a form of sensor first. We sense it somewhere in our energy field, in our bodies, and then we become seer-hearers. Most people are not seer-hearers first. And in some ways, I think sensing-knowing is better because when you see, you're distracted, and that can be very frustrating at times. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi. Name and where are you from?
Edith from Michigan.
And your question?
I actually just wanted to know what kind of reading you get just in general from hearing my voice.
What I want to say to you is I feel like you've had really an emotional roller coaster ride for 2.5 years, honey. Do you understand this? Yeah. And I don't think you're quite off of the roller coaster yet. Sorry.
I think
you're still kind of tied to whatever's going on in some way. And I know it sounds, when my listening audience is listening to me, you have to know I'm on air and I really try to respect the people that I'm reading for. So I would get more detailed if I was not on air with you. But I really want to say that you have to get a perspective about your roller coaster. Do you understand what I mean? And you have to know that it's not all about, you have to know what is your part and what isn't. And get perspective and start cutting some of the ties about this, huh?
Okay.
Because you're head for the pity pot and I don't want you to be.
Okay.
Because it's too hard on you. And you're really at the point of just being done, making different choices. And this is also very tied in with some things that happened when you were very young. Okay?
Okay.
That's why you kind of chose the situation you've chosen.
All right.
So at some levels, it's a little bit of a repeat pattern. But you are really woken up, and you're really stronger than you have been in the last 20 years at a woman. And you're going to change all of this, which is really good for you.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, you're so ready, hon. And so a lot of this, all this, for lack of better words, doo-doo, is going to fall away. Okay, and then you're landing on your feet and strong on yourself and your feet, because you're not going to take a lot of the stuff with you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you're so ready. So bless your heart. A lot of good homework went into this. When you have to make this kind of transition, you have to go in your cosmic basement. You have to go in your emotional debris field and really go, I choose not to take this stuff with me anymore. So it's a whole new beginning in 2000, after June of 2007. Fabulous for you.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so here's what I want to say. Learn to breathe, move, and appreciate. Because you don't appreciate because you've been in the so long. So
yeah.
Every time you don't have to go, yeah, I have to thank you, Spirit. In this moment, I'm divinely guided. Good for you. See, she's breathing. Good for you. That means you won. No, I can tell when you release. I can tell when you really let go of it now. See, because you know that you did your work and that you're ready to let go of it. And so it's a huge breakthrough for you, honey. Finances, emotions, everything just changed after June.
Oh, good.
And that's so close, hon.
I hope so.
April showers, bring May flowers, and in June everything's in bloom. So there you go. Let yourself bloom, hon. Let yourself have some things.
Oh, wonderful.
So I do encourage for you, please try and get the book, Ask and It's Given. Okay.
The what?
It's a book called Ask and It's Given by Jerry Hicks. It'll help you learn how to receive. Because you're real good at giving, but, hon, you failed the receiving 101.
Okay.
And it's time, okay?
Okay.
Lots of blessings. You take
good
care.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you.
You so deserve it.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, we're having a lot of good breakthroughs tonight. That's good. I applaud you because, you know, it really is amazing when we can go into our emotional debris field and make choices. Everything's a conscious choice, and we so pretend we don't. Remember in the old movies when you see the horse going in with the carriage behind it down the street and it has those incredible square blinders on? You know, sometimes I think we are walking through life with those blinders on, and we're all saying, I want to see, I want to be psychic, I want to do this, I want to do that, and we can't see anything. Half the time, I think, because we've got our hands over our faces, you know, and we're saying, yeah, but it's not my fault. Well, if we took our hands down and got off autopilot and took total responsibility for our world, guess what? We make great choices, lots of different choices. And really, when you become metaphysical, that's what happens. We start taking personal responsibility. We start realizing that everything starts with us, you know. You have to look at yourself first. You have to go inward. Nothing out there is going to make us happy until we look at who we are. Who am I today? What choices am I making? Mary Ellen is an incredible delight to me. For those of you who don't know, Mary Ellen Angel Scribes, she is a very famous author and columnist. She runs my website. She also books my appointments. And one of the gifts that she has given me is she truly is a cross between Pollyanna, Peter Pan, and Mary Poppins, tactically perfect. And the gift is that she's very childlike at times. She doesn't know a stranger to save her life. Everybody's her new next best friend. And she has taught me not to be so guarded, because with my clairvoyance, one of the things that side effects of this work is that because you get so much input in everything you do, in everywhere you go, in every object you pick up until you learn to control it more, that you kind of get on emotional sensory overload in a different way. And so you're not as trusting, or I don't even know that it's not that you're not as trusting. I think you just learn to shield really, really well. And sometimes you miss out on those wonderful, innocent moments and that innocence that is out there and so wonderful when you see it in somebody who doesn't have the need to watch, shield, and protect as much. But when you do this work, because you are sensitive, you do learn to shield. You do learn to surf energy, not invasively. I really suggest don't surf energy invasively, but just by walking into some room with someone's energy field, you're going to feel it. But you have to be respectful. And even though I sometimes do readings when I meet people, I really ask permission of their higher self. I really pay attention to how I say things. I really try not to just blurt them out and, you know, think that I have the right to, you know, inform this person of something. I really take the responsibility of mediumship very seriously. And so if you're out there developing, remember to learn the do's and don'ts of it, too. So if you're interested in learning more about me and our connection and our newsletter, please check our website at www.angelscribe.com. Also, make sure you check out bbsradio.com. There are so many fabulous shows. I cannot say enough about Don and his staff, and Michelle and all the other ones at BBS Radio, for making this show really a delight to come into your homes on the Internet and experience and share teachings. So I have enjoyed the show today. I hope I've given you lots of angel blessings. And until we meet again, remember to let your heart light shine to light your way and the way for others, and stay wrapped in the wings of angels.
Mary Ellen Angelscribe, author of Expect Miracles and the Angels and Miracles Good Newsletter, can be found at angelscribe.com.